I'd like now to welcome Linda Siegel with today's legislative update. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
So I thought today we could talk, among other things, about ethics reform. Why do we need ethics reform?
Well, I think that many legislators are concerned about what's been going on in the last couple of years with different elected officials going to the penitentiary.
Wait, what are some examples of that?
Yes, I think we know some treasurers and former legislators who are doing that. But what's happening, and of course the legislators have been trying, some of them have been introducing these bills for several years, but this year there's a whole onslaught of them already. I counted about 20 that have been introduced in just the 3 days that they were at the legislature last week. And what's interesting is five or six are the same bill, and that bill is creating a 10-person ethics commission that would be required to investigate any elected or appointed officials' possible misdoings.
So how would it actually work?
Well, the bill details a process, but there would be a complaint filed by someone to this ethics commission, and then they would be required to meet and look over the evidence and see what's going on.
So are we talking about ethics in the form of, what's the difference between an ethical principle and a crime?
Well, that's a good question, because, of course, if it's a crime, there are other entities to look at that, the district attorney's office, the attorney general. Ethics violations might have to do with campaign contributions, which might not necessarily be a crime, but there might be some nexus between an elected official's actions and a campaign contribution that they got. And, of course, this ethics commission we'll have to see how it actually turns out, if it even passes, if it would have real power, or if it would just be able to refer to a district court. But in addition to that ethics commission, there were some other interesting bills. You may know that we're one of only five states that does not have caps on our campaign contributions. So let's say you were a multimillionaire, Mary Charlotte, and you had this candidate you really liked. You could write them a check for $1 million in New Mexico, and that would be absolutely perfectly legal.
That's extraordinary. How'd that happen?
So the bills that have been introduced would put caps that are similar to the federal caps. In a congressional race, a presidential race, you can only give up to $2,300 per election cycle, which means the primary is one election cycle, the general is another election cycle. So those versions of the bill would put that cap on it, and also put a cap on what political action committees could give, and that cap would be $5,000.
So that wouldn't actually cost the state of New Mexico anything to do that. Is there any pressure against passing something like that?
Well, inertia is often the pressure. I mean, not that many people give those kinds of sums anyway. Political action committees often can give more. But this bill has been introduced before, too, so we don't know. But it is kind of embarrassing, I think, in New Mexico to be one of the only five states with no campaign contribution cap.
Do we have examples in New Mexico of large amounts of money swaying elections?
Well, money always impacts elections. If you've got more money, you can buy more media, you can do more mailings. So we know that if you look at the amount of money spent on campaigns and whether that person wins or not, it is much more often than not that the person who spends the most money wins the election. So it does have an impact. But another bill that's been introduced to counter that is public financing of all statewide offices. So that'd be governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, secretary of state, treasurer, auditor. and all legislators. And this, too, is a bill that in some version has been introduced in the past. But that would allow for people to participate in a public financing system that they would get money from the state coffers, from the taxpayers, and to run their campaigns, and they wouldn't have to go out and raise the tens and thousands of tainted, perhaps, dollars.
Now, that in a deficit year might have a little less traction than it would have in a flush year.
Yes, it's probably not likely in this session, although we do have public financing of the PRC, and we passed a year or two ago public financing of certain judicial races. So its time has come, and even in states like our neighbor Arizona, they've been doing public financing of legislative races and the governor's race for 6 to 8 years, I believe.
Do we know whether public financing really makes a difference in outcomes? In other words, are the candidates who win then more friendly to the actual public interest instead of special interests?
Well, that's hard to say. I think one of the great benefits of public financing is it allows people who don't have a lot of money, if they want to do public service, then they have an opportunity to run for that office and work really hard on an equal playing field and oftentimes win.
Linda Siegel is with us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, just before the top of the hour with the legislative update. Linda, thanks so much for being here. We look forward to seeing you on Wednesday.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Colors of Jazz.